From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, January 22, 2018. And on this day, Maine U.S. Senator Susan Collins plays a significant role in helping end the federal government shutdown. Researchers say differences in conservation practices have contributed to record hauls off of Maine and population collapse just a few hundred miles south. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
Maine's two U.S. senators had a hand in the so-called Common Sense Coalition, a bipartisan group that crafted the framework for ending the federal government shutdown. Mal Leary reports.
Maine Senator Susan Collins led the effort to reconvene the coalition that was instrumental in ending the federal government shutdown 5 years ago. She says members of both parties and independent Angus King met in her office to craft a resolution ending the stalemate.
Republicans as well as Democrats, all of whom are committed to getting to a solution. That is a powerful voting block in the Senate.
Collins says Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Tennessee, has committed to work on several major issues and bring to the floor for a vote legislation to grant legal status to those protected under DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. There are roughly 700,000 immigrants who are in the country illegally after being brought here as children that are covered by that program. If agreement is not reached by February 8th, then the continuing resolution runs out. McConnell promises to bring the issue to the floor for debate until a compromise is reached. And Collins says there are other issues that will have to be resolved over the next 3 weeks.
The most important thing is that we get government reopened and continue the negotiations on the budget caps, which will give the military and some of our domestic programs like opioid funding the money that is needed.
Collins is referring to efforts to pass a budget for the rest of the current year that runs out in October. Once agreement on overall spending caps are reached, the appropriations bills will need to be rewritten. King says that's a lot of work to accomplish in 3 weeks.
I think it's possible. I'll believe it when I see it, but I do think it's possible. And the hard one is going to be DACA. And basically on DACA, we have a twofold opportunity.
King says he is one of the coalition senators that have been tapped to work on the DACA issue in hopes of passing a compromise bill before the February 8th deadline. He says if a measure cannot be worked out, McConnell will allow the consideration of the issue by the full Senate to work out a compromise. King says the work of the coalition may signal the growing influence of moderates in the Senate.
We want to keep this effort going outside of the context of a shutdown. That may be one of the important outcomes of this, is the emergence of a strong middle.
Well, the Senate has passed a short-term spending bill. It must still pass the House and be signed by President Trump before the shutdown is ended. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The town manager of Jackman is expected to learn his fate at an emergency selectmen's meeting tomorrow morning following a revelation that he's a white separatist who's promoting the creation of a white homeland on social media. Town officials were apparently unaware of Tom Kaczynski's views until media outlets reported them on Friday. Now this small western Maine town, which relies heavily on tourism, is facing a public backlash. And as Susan Sharon reports, many local residents want to make it clear that the only separation they want is from him.
He's compared Islam to barbarism, criticized feminists, railed on immigrants, and solicited contributions for the defense of New Albion, the utopian white community he wants to create. Reaction to his view of this new social order has been swift and fierce. On Facebook over the weekend, many called for his immediate firing. Others called for a boycott of Jackman until he is gone, and a few have defended his right to free speech. In the small town of Jackman, population 862, residents are also weighing in.
We hope that the selectmen will make the right decision in this matter.
Kimberly Danforth has lived in Jackman most of her life. Her father, Raymond Levesque, runs the popular Bishop store. Levesque declined to speak with reporters, but shared a copy of a letter he's written to Tom Kaczynski. In it, he writes that as French-Canadian descendants, his family members dropped the name Levesque's Market to try to combat discrimination common in the mid-1900s. Now, all these years later, Levesque says he welcomes all customers to his business. He's asking Kaczynski to part ways with the town. It's a sentiment shared by other residents.
Well, I'd like to see him go, obviously. I think a lot of people would.
Speaking at her grandmother's restaurant, Mama Bear's, Tara Ashy Roberts says she loves Jackman because of all there is to do in the outdoors, hunting, fishing, snowmobiling. But Kaczynski's offensive views, she says, have no place here.
He might have a few supporters, but I think the majority of the town are definitely against his racism.
The people that I've met in this town are nothing like that.
Vanessa Harnois is a member of the Passamaquoddy tribe who recently moved to Jackman and who works at a Passamaquoddy maple syrup business in town. She says residents have been nothing but welcoming and supportive of her. And like others, Harnois says she was shocked to learn of the town manager's divisive beliefs.
I hope the town just makes the best decision that they can, really.
Larry Mead says the best decision would be for Tom Kaczynski to leave. Mead, who does not live in Jackman, is president of the Maine Town, City, and County Government Association. He says Kaczynski's views are incompatible with the role and responsibilities of a municipal manager, who is supposed to promote public trust and confidence in local government.
I don't know any of the members of the Jackman Board of Selectmen, but it's my hope and my expectation that they will recognize that Mr. Kaczynski cannot continue to hold that office and that they will dismiss him.
Zach Hyden of the ACLU of Maine says the First Amendment doesn't protect speech that makes it impossible for someone like Kaczynski to do his job, whether it's supervising women or ensuring there's diversity in the workplace. But Hyden says whatever Kaczynski's fate, there's something else to consider going forward.
The town of Jackman and towns and cities across Maine should do more to affirmatively promote racial justice and not simply be contented that when they somebody gets exposed as having neo-Nazi support, that they're fired. We should really strive to do a little better than that.
Reached by telephone, Kaczynski said he will be at the meeting Tuesday morning to answer selectmen's questions and reach an amicable decision on what's best for the town. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Lobster conservation techniques pioneered by Maine fishermen fueled a population boom that's led to record landings this century. That's the conclusion of new peer-reviewed research published today. The paper also finds that lobstermen in southern New England could have used the same techniques to prevent or at least slow the collapse of their fisheries even in the face of climate change, but they didn't. In this latest installment of Beyond 350, Confronting Climate Change, Fred Bever reports.
Cape Elizabeth lobsterman Kurt Brown's been hauling traps since he was a kid. He says he quickly learned that when he pulled up a female lobster covered in eggs, he was looking at the fishery's future.
And so you get used to seeing lobsters, and then you see a lobster with eggs, and it's a whole new animal. The underside of the tail is just covered with eggs.
Since 1917, Maine lobstermen like Brown have used a technique known as V-notching. When they find an egg-bearing female in their traps, they clip a V into the end of its tail and throw it back. So the next time it turns up in someone's trap, even when it's not showing eggs, the harvester knows it's a fertile female and throws it back. And later, the lobstermen pushed the legislature to impose limits on the size of the lobster they can keep because it's the biggest ones that produce the most eggs.
I use my measure right here, right on the measure. At the end of the measure is a little tool in the shape of a V, so you just grab the lobster, underside of the tail, just like that, and it cuts a V-notch right in the tail. Quick, painless, throw her back in and let her do more of her job.
And those fertile females have been doing that job very well off of Maine. Since the 1980s, lobster abundance here has grown by more than 500%, with landings shooting up from fewer than 20 million pounds in 1985 to more than 120 million pounds in 2015, with a value of more than $500 million.
Huge, huge increase in lobsters.
Andrew Pershing is Chief Scientific Officer at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute in Portland. He's one of nine scientists, including fishery specialists, climate modelers, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, who worked on a paper just published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It documents how harvester practices and other factors have contributed to the Maine lobster fishery's success. Climate change, he says, has been the most important variable. The Gulf of Maine's waters have been warming faster than any other major water body in the world. Off the coast of Maine, that's actually been a boon for lobster, which reproduce most prolifically in water that's a bit warmer than the Gulf was until just recently.
And because we, since about 1999, have been at really optimal temperatures for lobster, it's been about 50% that, and then 50% the management that we have here in Maine. And they really are almost co-equal in the model.
In other words, lobster population growth was twice what it would have been without Maine lobstermen's conservation practices. There are other synergies at work, Pershing says. The warming-driven collapse of the cod fishery, for one, which took one of the lobster's top predators out of the equation. But the scientists bore down on management techniques thanks to a difference in regulation between the Maine lobster fishery and the fisheries to its south. Simply put, V-notching and size limit regulations were much weaker in southern New England, Pershing says. So when water temperatures tipped above optimal levels in southern New England early this century, fisheries there weren't as resilient as they could have been, and they collapsed.
In southern New England, if they had managed the fishery the way Maine did, they would still have a fishery. It would be smaller than the fishery that they had in the 1990s, but they would still have a more productive fishery for sure.
In the field of fisheries management, Maine's story is unusual, in which rather than quotas being dictated from above, the call for specific regulations was led by harvesters. Patrice McCarran, executive director of the Maine Lobstermen's Association, says that dynamic should help Maine's lobster fishery to persist even if warming continues.
And that's the really, really nice, healthy thing that's going on in 2017, 2018 that didn't happen earlier in the 80s and 90s. Is that the scientists do talk to industry, they do listen to industry, and we actually see response, which is really unimaginable.
There are signs that in parts of the Maine fishery, the boom may be over, with the temperature sweet spot for lobster reproduction moving north and east into Canada. Recent data and the new model are predicting that, but scientist Andrew Pershing says that in a warming world, protecting those big egg bearers will significantly temper decline here. Lobstermen, he says, have shown that by committing to smart management, to some degree, they can make their own luck. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Monday, January 22nd, 2018. Thanks to Keith Shortall and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.